Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are setting the navigational charts to explore some of the most challenging inner territory laid out in the RAFT program material.
You really are.
We're deep into the third major stage of this path to clarity.
That's right. We're opening up Chapter 38, which introduces the first, and I think often the most insistent, of what the program calls the five hazards.
Sensual desire.
Sensual desire, or, in the traditional language, kamachanda.
Okay, so before we plunge into the water, let's quickly situate ourselves for you listening along. This chapter falls squarely within the freedom stage of the program. Hmm. We often pronounce the acronym RAFT just as the word RAFT, and it stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, and Train.
Right.
And this freedom section is all about confronting and learning to navigate these powerful internal weather systems that historically just cloud our awareness.
Precisely. And our mission here is so critical. We have to learn to understand these hazards, not as some form of, personal moral failure.
Mm, which is easy to do.
So easy. But they're universal, natural, evolved tendencies of the human mind. They're temporary weather systems. And here's the crucial insight from the RAFT program.
Okay.
Their greatest danger is not during quiet contemplation. They are most destructive off the cushion, in the heat of daily life.
That's where they lead to a total breakdown of inhibitory control.
A total breakdown. So it's not just a momentary distraction. It's this profound temporary failure of the system that allows us to make wise choices.
And that's what can lead us into those compulsive cycles.
Exactly. When our awareness is momentarily eclipsed by these hazards, our clarity is just. It's extinguished. And this makes us incredibly prone to reactive urges that promise immediate shallow relief.
Though don't deliver.
But inevitably lead to destructive habits. And sometimes decades of regret. Sensual desire is tackled first because it is that primal pull of craving, of fantasy, that so often gets the whole process started.
And to make this tangible, Gautama, the Buddha, gave us a remarkably vivid simile for this specific hazard.
He did. A brilliant one. Sensual desire is like water mixed with colored dye.
Okay.
The water looks beautiful, maybe exciting or inviting because of the dye, but its depth is completely obscured.
You can't see through it.
You can't. The colored surface distorts reality with projections of pleasure, meaning you can no longer see the clear truth of what lies beneath or the obstacles that are waiting for you. It promises clarity, but it delivers delusion.
Okay, let's unpack this metaphor and really get into the content. Why does the RAFT program prioritize sensual desire, this pull of craving and fantasy? Why put it ahead of the other four hazards?
Well, because it's the root engine.
It really is.
It seems to be the engine driving our search for temporary contentment.
It is. And it aligns perfectly with Gautama's second reality, which establishes that suffering intensifies through craving, or tanta, that thirsting.
Right.
Sensual desire, kamachanda, is literally desire linked to the senses. It is the mind's immediate, almost reflexive gravitational pull toward anything perceived as pleasurable.
Like a certain taste, a specific image, or the validation of status, or just the emotional reassurance of being entertained. The entire journey to freedom demands moving beyond that insistent temporary siren song toward a durable higher happiness. One rooted in clarity and collectedness.
And this is where the ancient wisdom feels so incredibly relevant to modern neuroscience. You mentioned the off-the-cushion black hole effect. How does craving translate into a biological failure of executive function?
It's a direct neurological process.
Yeah.
It really is. Craving functions as a mental black hole because it hijacks the frontal lobe.
Okay.
So when we are caught up in the flow of life, not in a quiet, controlled environment, the mind's field of perception just narrows drastically. The heart-mind agitates, and our capacity for inhibitory control.
The very thing we need.
The cornerstone of executive function.
Yeah.
Just breaks down. We know intellectually that checking that notification or having that extra drink or engaging in that gossip will lead toward eventual self-reproach.
But the urge is so strong.
It's so compelling that the impulse takes over before the consequence is even considered. It steers the vessel right back into old patterns.
And that explains the profound power of that biological pull we feel.
Absolutely. The modern view confirms that sensual desire is deeply rooted in the brain's powerful dopaminergic reward system.
Right.
This system evolved specifically to motivate us towards survival essentials, food, shelter, reproduction. But in our hyper-stimulated environment, it's incredibly easy for this system to be hijacked by non-essential rewards.
Like the quick hit of social media validation.
The endless streaming content, the instant gratification of online shopping. This hijacking forms a causal link to those compulsive cycles, where the anticipation of relief, that dopamine spike, becomes exponentially more compelling than the actual reward itself.
It's the constant yearning for the next thing that keeps us locked in.
Precisely. We are conditioning our minds to equate activity, striving, and external seeking with satisfaction, when the long-term result is just burnout and deeper agitation.
That makes perfect sense. Moving back to the navigational language of the RAFT program, on the chart, sensual desire is helpfully named the pulling current.
Yes, it is described as a seductive magnetic force trying to draw the vessel off course.
Toward the banks of quick, shallow relief.
Exactly. The danger is not necessarily the current itself, but falling overboard into old patterns of response. We have to recognize the magnetic field as a universal warning sign, not as a personal failure.
To map the emotional reality of this pulling current, the RAFT program offers another powerful image from Buddhist psychology, the concept of the hungry ghost.
That image is so helpful because it externalizes the feeling we have inside when we crave. The hungry ghost has this cavernous empty belly, but a needle-thin neck.
So it can never get enough.
It's forever trying to ingest the world-chasing external sensory experiences, but is structurally unable to swallow enough to feel truly nourished or satisfied.
How can you recognize that feeling in your own day-to-day life?
It's that feeling of insatiable lack. It's when you finish one dessert and you immediately start thinking about the next.
Or you close one app on your phone only to open another one instantly.
Yes, driven by a deep, nagging sense that something is missing or that this moment isn't quite good enough. This metaphor highlights a crucial point. The lack is fundamentally internal, rooted in underlying discontent or restlessness. Yet the mind continues its external futile search for fulfillment.
Which forces us to clarify a really important philosophical distinction here. The RAFT program is not asking us to become ascetics or avoid everything that brings joy.
Not at all.
We're not meant to avoid things like music, appreciating nature, or good company.
No, that would be mistaking the finger pointing at the moon for the moon itself. Wholesome qualities, they have a pleasant feeling tone, and they can be appreciated fully without the heavy baggage of clinging. The issue is the grasping.
The grasping.
The desperate hunger for an ongoing, sustained, pleasant experience that simply cannot be guaranteed or satisfied. This insatiable hunger ultimately leads to agitation and disappointment, because everything pleasant is, by definition, impermanent.
So the craving is like trying to hold on to a fistful of water.
Exactly. When we mistake sensory experience for lasting fulfillment, we're just doomed to frustration. Craving becomes like a dog chewing a bone while it's a frantic, focused anticipation, but no actual nourishment, just the continued ache of hunger.
So, if sensual desire is the pulling current, how do we effectively steer against it? The program has already laid the groundwork by giving us the five defenders from earlier chapters. How do we use those?
The five defenders: confidence, courageous effort, healing mindfulness, the gathered mind, and discernment. They're our crew members. They're responsible for maintaining a steady keel.
Okay.
For sensual desire specifically, they stabilize our response. Healing mindfulness is the early warning system. It recognizes the physical signatures of wanting that heat in the chest.
Your tightness in the gut.
The leaning forward energy of anticipation. Then discernment steps in to reveal the true long-term cost of chasing the urge.
The inevitable contraction and disappointment.
Exactly. And the other three defenders just ensure we have the internal strength to hold the course when the body is leaning toward instant gratification.
And the program suggests that as we move into the next section, the upcoming seven supports, or factors of awakening, they offer more specific targeted counterforces, like antidotes.
That's a brilliant conceptual connection. The defenders are the foundational strength. The supports are the refined, phenomenological antidotes.
I see.
So since sensual desire is fueled by restless agitation and that anxious search for more, the mind needs to intentionally shift its internal tone. For this hazard, we apply joy specifically, energetic joy, which is a state of buoyancy.
And calm.
And deep calm. This potent combination shifts the heart-mind away from frantic, anxious grasping toward a genuine, peaceful contentment that doesn't depend on external input.
That makes the solution feel active rather than passive. But if the goal is to cut the fuel, it seems the ultimate quiet antidote practice is the most profound. Enoughness.
Enoughness is ultimately the core antidote, because it surgically cuts the fuel for craving right at the root.
How so?
Sensual desire and the hungry ghost mentality thrive on the fundamental belief that satisfaction is external and always just slightly out of reach. when you intentionally cultivate a sense of sufficiency.
By pausing.
By pausing to register that this current moment, this simple task, this meal, this quiet breath is enough. It completely destabilizes the urgency of the craving hazard.
It sounds like a radical act of internal reorientation.
It is. It's the quiet taste of fulfillment that emerges when you simply stop the endless searching for the next pleasant experience. It addresses the internal lack by asserting that wholeness is already here.
It's the recognition that peace is not something you get from the world,
but something you let happen within you. If you remove the urgent belief that you need something else to feel okay, the pulling current loses its magnetic force.
Let's make this ultra practical for anyone listening. When that pulling current is strong, what is the core strategy? The RAF program is very clear. Craving must be starved, not fed.
Yes. Craving is fed by dwelling on the fantasy, the storyline, the detailed projection of future pleasure. The mind spins a story about how great life will be after you indulge.
And it's starved.
It's starved by dropping the fantasy immediately and grounding in the body's immediate sensations, seeing the object's impermanence, and refusing to engage the mental narrative.
Okay, let's walk through the four steps for working with the urge, maybe using a common modern scenario, like the urge to excessively check for external validation.
Excellent. Let's say you feel that familiar internal pull toward your phone, driven by expectation. The first step is to name it early.
Okay.
Acknowledge it gently and impersonally. Wanting is here. This is the pulling current. This early non-judgmental recognition prevents you from instantly fusing with the craving. You create space.
Naming it means it's something happening to you, not something that you are.
Precisely. The second step is to turn toward the raw feeling. Look beneath the compelling storyline, the fantasy of new likes or messages, and turn toward the raw bodily feeling.
Where is that hunger?
Is it a restlessness in your legs? A tightness in your chest, the ache of not enough? You feel the physics of the lack, just without the story.
Then we need to create space for the urge to pass.
That's the third step. Widen the pause. Ground the experience in something reliable, like the breath or the sensation of your posture. You are actively creating measurable distance between the urge and the action.
Even a few seconds helps.
It might only be a 3-second pause, but that's enough space for discernment and mindfulness to reboot your executive function.
And that leads to the final crucial step, training the mind toward peace.
The fourth step is to savor the absence. When the urge inevitably crests and fades, and they always fade, you linger with the ease, the spaciousness, and clarity that remains.
Ah, so you're training the heart mind to prefer the state of peace.
Exactly. To prefer it over the hyperstimulation the urge promised. You are building trust in the absence of craving.
To ensure safe passage, particularly when we are teetering on the edge of falling overboard into a potentially destructive habit, the program offers three crucial navigational questions, a quick moral compass.
Yes, these questions force an honest self-appraisal when the mind is clouded. They are: 1, is this harmless to myself and others?
2, will this lead towards self-appreciation or self-reproach?
And 3, will it result in simple pleasure or ultimate happiness? An honest answer to that last question often reveals whether you're chasing a fleeting sensory input or cultivating a lasting state of freedom.
So, to reiterate the core lesson from this deep dive,
sensual desire is an incredibly powerful conditioned wave of energy, but its power lies entirely in the accompanying story and fantasy we attach to it. Freedom begins the very moment the mind recognizes the pull, names it, and chooses not to follow it blindly.
Every time.
Each time awareness allows the wave to crest and pass without fusion, the heart's trust in its own clarity strengthens.
We want to acknowledge that the materials we've been deep diving into, the RAFT to Freedom workbook, is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. They are generously making the entire 66 chapters freely available online.
Which is an amazing resource.
It is. And you can find that essential resource at RAFT2Freedom.org.
It is a remarkable and comprehensive guide for anyone navigating these often turbulent inner weather systems.
And for you, the listener, as you reflect on this dive into the nature of sensual desire, here is the self-reflection question to carry with you this week. What does the absence of sensual desire feel like? How does your attention behave then?
And we will leave you with the final provocative thought from the end of the chapter, reinforcing this theme of choice and freedom.
Desire is a contract we make with ourselves to be unhappy until we get what we want, attributed to Naval Ravikant.